Hello, listeners. Welcome to the One Board Podcast, Episode 3. I'm Rick White, and here with me, as always, is three-time Academy Award winner and voted most likely to start a podcast about board games in his high school, Ryan Gutowski. Hello,
sir.
How are you?
Thank you. Just being here is an honor, Rick, as you know. And I'm honored that the Academy has recognized my achievements.
Yes. I should have actually said three-time Academy Award stealer, as I believe you have just gone around to homes and stolen those trophies.
That's right. I actually, I do have an EGOT because I stole them, broke into celebrities' homes, and stole each of those trophies. So,
yes. It never said anything about earning them.
Not at all. Oprah's Emmy was the best because her guard dogs bit me and it hurt really bad. So I have not only like a war wound, but also an Emmy.
Yes. War wound and an Emmy. That's how you're supposed to
really
get them.
That's right. So Rick, the holidays are upon us. If you're listening to this podcast and we are in the holidays, yes, we're talking to you. And so tonight we're going to talk about party games and games that we play around the holidays and games that are fun for just getting together with family. I know when we get together now with our family, it's really cool because we'll usually eat dinner, we'll hang out and talk some, but then usually there's an aspect of the night where we get together and we play a game. It's really cool, and it's cool to see my family's personality, my brother and my sister-in-law, and my mom and dad just kind of light up in those moments where we're trying to beat each other around the table. So what are some games that you play around the holidays?
Yeah, for me, you know, we have my family and we have Sarah's family, and it's kind of a different approach to both of those. Around Thanksgiving, we go down to my parents' house on Wednesday before, sometimes the Tuesday before, and my cousins from Cedartown will generally come down and spend the night with us. And then the next day, we'll have 40 people all at one Thanksgiving. And so, you know, not all gamers there, but what I like to try to do is break out some games that might appeal to some of our younger cousins and maybe get some of the aunts and uncles involved as well. So there I've broken out in the past few years. Pass the Pigs Party Edition was a pretty big hit last year, and the year before.
Yeah, actually, it's funny. I've seen Pass the Pigs a bunch of different times on the store shelves, but you actually wrote a review about Pass the Pigs Party Edition for One Board Family. Right after you wrote that, I ended up walking into a Goodwill, and I checked their game section every once in a while, hoping to find some major, crazy, cool find. And I found a copy that was in perfect condition, just sitting on shelves in a beaten-up box. And my daughter actually keeps it in her book bag. So every once in a while, we'll be in a restaurant, and Pass the Pigs will come out, and people have fun.
Yeah, and it's just so simple, and it's just goofy enough. I mean, it's not one of those, I got to work hard so I can win. It's just silly enough, you know, to break out and play.
That's right.
And then the other one that we broke out last year that we did a review of that was pretty popular was Speak Out. And that's where you put in the basically a plastic dental appliance into your mouth and try to say ridiculous phrases. You know, if you want to, I like to try to pretend I'm a mature adult sometimes, but there's no way to keep me from laughing at somebody trying to talk through that device and just stumbling all over their words. There's just something primal within me that makes me laugh so hard at that game.
Yeah. That's definitely, if you want to see your uncle and aunt laugh their head off, take it, bust out Speak Up. Or actually, I think it's funny because last Christmas season, these games were popping out all over the place. Every store was selling out of them. And I think Speak Up, and I think there's like Watch Your Mouth, and there's like five different versions made from all different people. I think what happened is this is actually some sort of ruse by dentistry, the dentist industry. And they're trying to make us buy their old mouth guards. And they basically just created a game around it so that we'll purchase them.
Yes, I would definitely agree. It's all being we're being duped, but we're being duped well because we keep buying them.
Good old big dentistry.
Yeah, and that's my side of the family, and then my wife's side of the family, it's just her immediate family. They moved down here from Chicago when she was about 10, so there's not a lot of other relatives nearby, and so with them, we'll play more traditional board games. Well, by traditional, I mean things that like maybe you and I talk about, but we do like to break out some classics from time to time. Like Scattergories is a big deal for us. Say Anything is always fun. You know, games that allow us to kind of interact, be a little bit goofy.
Yeah.
You know, it used to be Cranium, you know, back in the day. So games like that, that just, you know, get six players in there, and you can have a good time with those kinds of games.
I think the games that make the best holiday family games are the ones that invite the people who are skeptical about gaming. And I think that's what you've got to look for. I look at one of my favorites, Wits and Wagers. I actually purchased this as a Christmas gift for my brother-in-law, probably, 7-8 years ago. And after, when I found it, I was like, you know what? I'm going to buy a copy for myself. I like trivia. Let's see what this is all about. I didn't know much about it. I think it had been on the market for about a year or so. And we played it nonstop during the holidays that year. And every time we went somewhere, we would bring it with us. It plays, I think 6 or 7 people, I believe. I mean, it's a great family friendly game that invites everybody to the table, because you don't have to be good at trivia. That's the big thing about Wits and Wagers. You don't have to be good at trivia. You just have to be able to guess and try to bid on the right thing. And that's what I love about party games. That invite everybody to the table. It's not the skill set. You don't have to be this master mathematician to figure out how to get how to win a game.
Right. And, you know, with Wits and Wagers, there's, you know, Wits and Wagers Party, which simplifies the formula even more. There's Wits and Wagers, I think there's a family edition that people with younger kids might appreciate. There's actually... on Kickstarter not that long ago, there was a Wits and Wagers like Vegas edition. They had like a giant mat that you can like spread out over a table. They said it like bumps it up to like a ridiculous number of players and things like that. So that looked really cool. So, I mean, maybe your family, you know, one other thing that we do at my family is we break out bingo from time to time, because, you know, it's my grandmother's bingo set, you know, she loves it. Everybody can just kind of chill, relax, still kind of talk. Maybe Wits and Wagers becomes that for your family. Because you can get the big mat out and play.
Sequence has always felt a little bit like bingo, because you've got those cards. And I think I mentioned it in one of the other shows, you know, Sequence is, that game that, from my childhood, you know, six or eight players can play this, because what you do is you break up into teams. And so you give everybody a couple chips, everybody's working together, you know, around the board. It gets real competitive and fun. So one of the games that, gets super competitive when we bust it out. A couple of years ago, Aaron bought me a copy of Cash and Guns, and we played it. We have, one of our traditions around Christmas is Christmas night. We usually invite some people over that may not have family in town, so we invite them over for dinner, and we do leftovers, and we usually play games. Well, I remember that Christmas, we took out Cash and Guns, and I remember how competitive that game got. We played 2 or 3 games, and people were pointing guns at each other and yelling at each other. It was a very hostile Christmas.
It's always how that's a little too close to home, you know, pointing guns at each other at Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to have any PTSD from, no, I'm just kidding, from childhood.
Another good one, Codenames. Codenames is something that the whole family can get around, trying to deduce what the word is that they're trying to share on the table. And now they've got, just this fall, they released Codenames Disney and Codenames Marvel, which, I mean, if you've got Disney fans, if you have a bunch of nieces and nephews that really love Disney stuff, man, that's a perfect game to bust out with family and friends around the holidays. In fact, that actually made our Christmas buyer's guide. The three of us have published buyer's guides on one board family, and that actually was one of my choices for family game. So it's definitely one that you should check into.
Yeah, and even if, you know, even if it's just a deck of cards, or, you know, even, and it I shudder just to say this, but Uno, gross. But even if it's a game that, you know, maybe we in the board gaming community don't appreciate as much, I think as long as you're getting the family around to spend time together, you know, not just, you know, turning on the TV and, you know, watching whatever's on, you know, it could be nothing and you're just sitting there watching it and not talking with each other. I think it's better to have a game that you can kind of sit around and be having fun together as a family.
Definitely. Definitely. I'm looking forward to Thanksgiving. Is Thanksgiving spent with my wife's side of the family, and we always spend, you know, a couple days out there around Thanksgiving. So, and then around Christmas, we end up spending it with both sides of the family, over a couple days. And so I know that games will be played, plentiful amounts of games will be played over those couple of days.
I love it.
Well, Rick, we are going to transition into Mechanics Corner. We got a really cool mechanic that I think a lot of people will know games that fit into this category. So we'll be back in just a minute. Back with Mechanics Corner. Rick, this week we're talking about set collections. Tell me a little about set collecting games, and what does set collection mean?
Yeah, I think of set collection, you know, for non-gamers, I think the easiest comparison is like Rummy, where you're often either collecting like cards of a similar type, or you're trying to collect, you know, one of different types of cards or something like that. Basically, you're trying to get cards in some way that meet certain conditions for scoring points.
That's right. One of my favorites is Sushi Go. I'll tell you, a lot of people know about Sushi Go. Sushi Go Party, that's one that is one of our favorites. That actually made it onto our 10x10 challenge. If you're wondering what that is, check it out on oneboardfamily.com. But Sushi Go, you're trying to collect these sets of really cute sushi. So dumplings, if you've got one dumpling, it's worth 1 point. If you've got two dumplings, it's worth three. The set is worth 3 points, and it goes up substantially from there. If you collect two pieces of tempura, it's worth 5 points, but a single piece of tempura is not worth anything. So it's really cool. I like the mechanic because I feel like with set collection games, you're always competing for getting that little thing that you need to finish out your set, but there's usually a way for other people to keep it from you. And I love that about it. There's that competitive nature that gets thrown in there.
Right. And Sushi Go and Sushi Go Party kind of have that more playful, you could even say like a juvenile vibe. Maybe that's not a good way to say it, but I think kind of like its big brother would be Seven Wonders.
Yeah.
Seven Wonders is one of the more popular board games among the board gaming community. It involves it's actually quite similar to Sushi Go, I would say, where you're passing hands and drafting cards, but there's a lot more complexity to it. And, you know, for those people that are looking for, you know, a step up from Sushi Go, that's a way to go. There's also the super uber fantastic Seven Wonders Duel, which is a two-player version of that, and kind of works with similar mechanics. I actually personally don't like Seven Wonders, but Seven Wonders Duel I'm a huge fan of.
See, I think I've had good experiences with Seven Wonders. I really like Seven Wonders Duel. I've only played it twice, I believe. And I really like the mechanics of it, where you're trying to collect these sets and you're trying to really hone in because honestly, in set collection games, if you try to collect a little bit of everything, you're going to spread yourself thin and you're not going to score enough points. So there's some strategy in all of these games that we're talking about of making sure that you stick to a specific route or road and getting those things that are going to benefit you the most instead of saying, well, I'll be a jack of all trades and I'll just collect everything I can. A good example of that would be Best Treehouse Ever from Green Couch Games. That's such a fun game. That's a game you've done a review for. You did a video review on oneboardfamily.com. And that's such a fun game because I found as I got to play the game more, I've got to stick to certain colors. And then I need to watch what my competitor is doing so that I don't, you know, at first I was just like, oh, that room looks really cool. I'm just going to throw it in my treehouse. And I found myself really messing up because I didn't have enough to really lock in a specific color to get awards, you know?
Yeah. And that's kind of got an extra layer to it because of the, you know, placement mechanic. But it still, you know, has very similar mechanics there. But yeah, I just a good thing about it to me is that you can take the set collection mechanic and spin it just even a little bit and it becomes like a whole new game and a whole new experience.
Yeah, that's right.
One game for me that's like that is Bonanza, which is got a pretty decent history to it. And it's a very hard sell because it's like, this is a game about planting beans. But really it's super cool because, the one thing I like about it that's different than other games is as you get cards in your hand, you cannot rearrange them in your hand. You have to keep playing them in order as, that you acquired them. And so you have to make decisions on like, you can only plant a certain number of bean crops, and that means like a certain number of cards in front of you. Obviously, the more cards you have, the more points it's worth.
Yeah.
You know, there's just some cool mechanic. I think that's a really cool mechanic that causes people to have to, you know, really strategize properly. And there's some other things in there that I think that's a game that I underrate myself. You know, I don't think to break that out, but you know, I'm sitting here thinking, gosh, I want to go play Bonanza right now. It's a really solid.
I saw it was
set
on sale
game.
A couple days ago on Amazon, and the box art for that thing, is it a bean with like a hoe smashing the ground? I mean,
yes.
It's just such an odd, I think it looks like such an old style game that I sometimes mm-hmm. gloss over it. I've actually never played it. So the next time we get together, we need to play that because I've got to try it. It's definitely one that people have talked about quite a bit.
Yeah. I mean, just looking at it right now, it came out in 1997. And, you know,
really?
For our,
okay.
we, you know, have, shoot, a game that's like 4 years old. We're like, that game is ancient. But, and it's got a lot of little offshoots and things like that. But I like it a lot, and we've actually played that at family gatherings before. I mean, it's good stuff. I like it.
That's awesome. Probably one of my most beautiful set collection game that our family owns would have to be Herbaceous. That's a game that we got it. I think this summer we got a copy of Herbaceous, and man, it's such a beautiful game, and it is very set collection. I mean, that is the primary mechanic, and it does it really, really well. I think it's one of my favorites because not only are cards beautiful, but there's so much strategy to how the game plays. On a normal turn, what you do is you draw two cards. You draw one card, and you make a decision to put the card in your personal garden or put it in a community garden. And then you pick up a second card, and the second card has to go in the opposite place. So you're making these decisions one by one, not knowing what the next card is going to be. And it might be that card that you need. So you're building up this community garden, you're building up this private garden, and at some point in the game, you have to make that decision and pull the trigger to make a set. Either one set of, you could take, what is it? Bay leaves, and you can take all the bay leaves and you can plant them in one pot, or you can take some rosemary. What else is in there? Bay leaves, saffron. You can take all these different things and make sets, like sets of two, and plant them in a pot. The game plays so well, and there's a little bit of take that, as you know, somebody's waiting for one more dill card to come out. and you snatch everything away from them right before their turn. So it's that's probably my favorite set collection game that we own. Because it's beautiful, it's four players, plays really great at two players. It's really fun.
Yeah, and we haven't even gotten to like half the things that we wrote in our list. I mean, we've got Circus Flacati, which I've done a review of, Morels, which has been played a lot around my house. We have, you know, one board family favorite, Gyrating Hamsters, which yes. We've covered quite frequently, and I think is about to deliver from its Kickstarter pretty soon. But, you know, it is often a very easy kind of game to explain. Yeah. It doesn't take a lot of setup. You know, you're not going to be putting out a board and, you know, you're not going to have to probably worry about running out of room or anything like that on the table. They're often quite portable. I think as you're beginning a board game collection, set collection can be overlooked because they're smaller boxes. They're not as complex. And people will say, that's just a filler game or whatever. But I think if you're looking for a solid game that's usually a little bit cheaper than some of your big boxes, I think a set collection game is definitely a good way to go.
Definitely, definitely. So you guys check some of those games out. We've got reviews for Herbaceous, Sushi Go Party, Jaipur. We've got Circus Flacati. Have you done a review for Seven Wonders Duel? I can't remember.
I can't remember. I do know we have a Lost Cities review.
Lost Cities,
We've got a best Treehouse Ever review.
That's right.
So we've got a lot of stuff out there for anybody that's interested in set collection games.
Yeah, definitely. So check out those reviews, and maybe you'll connect with one of those games, and it might make it onto your game shelf soon. So we'll be back in just a minute with Rick's review. Back, Rick, you've got a review for us this week. Tell us a little about your review.
Awesome. So this week I was wanting to, you know, we're talking about games to play with the family. We're talking about set collection games. So I thought, what better game to review this week than Birds of a Feather, which is a game that came out in 2015 from Nothing Sacred Games, which I have not heard of doing anything else. But, this game is one that they put out and one that I like cool. pretty well.
So tell me a little about Birds of a Feather. What, tell me about the artwork. I'm always interested in art, and what the cards look like, and, tell me a little about it.
So, Birds of a Feather is, you know, sometimes in set collection games, the premise can be a little bit weird, and this one's no different. You are a bird watcher.
Okay.
So in Birds of a Feather, all of the cards, look like almost like the Audubon Society. They look like they were taken straight from one of those books where, you know, they have actual birds on them.
Nice.
With their actual names. And, you know, there's some background to kind of show the type of environment where they might live. It's a pretty cool little set of cards that you're getting in this box.
Do you feel like there's some educational value to Birds of a Feather, or is it just kind of fits the theme really well?
You know, there could be. It depends. Like, I think if your family does any bird watching, this would be a fantastic one to break out because the way the game works, you are a bird watcher. There's five different areas that you can go visit that are like...
Is there a board to this?
No, it's all cards based.
Oh, okay.
And so you, the different like regions, like mountains, wetlands, the desert, things like that. And so the birds that live in those different places are featured on the cards. So you might get to see like what kind of birds, you know, do you think live in swamps or do you think live in, the desert and things like that. So there's a little bit of educational value, but I think it's like so specific that you'd have to be really intentional about that if that's kind of what you're going for.
So what you want to do is you want to bait your Uncle Larry into playing this game with you, and he's like, there's a red-breasted robin. I've got to get one of those cards. And then you know he's not going to win because the red-breasted robin is so terrible.
Yes, you don't want him to do that. So, and kind of how it works in the set collection mechanic is you're trying to see all the different types of birds that are in each area. So there are, I believe, 7 different types of birds in each area. So everybody at the same time puts a card down and then flips it over. And whatever card you've placed, let's say you place a card from the desert, you see your card that you played, but you also see every other card that was played from the desert.
Okay.
So if 2 other players played a desert card, you're going to see their birds too. So you get to mark those off on your little checklist. And that's pretty cool. But to add to that factor is on your next turn, you also see all the cards that were played last turn in the region that you're playing. So like if I saw on a turn that, you know, 4 players played wetlands cards, mm-hmm. then on my next turn, I might want to play a wetlands card so that I see everybody else's stuff.
Okay, gotcha.
And so you kind of have that kind of balance mechanic of, you know, you get to strategize a little bit and it's not all luck. The other thing too is if you see some cards played on the last round that you think other people might be trying to match, you can go ahead and be prepared to play it as well so that you match everybody else on that turn. So it has a pretty cool set collection to it where you're not actually collecting the cards as much as it is you're hoping to see them.
Okay. And how are you recording? I guess, how are you recording what you see?
So you all get like this little paper pad. It's kind of like the thing I think of as Yahtzee, you know, how you mark, I got 4 of a kind and I got this many. There's just like this, you know, spreadsheet of the birds that you can see. There's not names. Instead, each bird has a type and the same 7 types appear in each of the 5 different wetlands. Okay. So you just put a little check mark in each little box that when you see them. And then if you see all of the birds in one geographic area, you get a 3-point bonus.
Nice.
Okay. And so it's just this pad of paper. It comes with a bunch of little ones. There's also an app that you can use, but it follows pretty well. And one thing I like about it too is that you know, we were talking about games with your family. It scales up really well. It has a solo variant, which I haven't tried.
Mm-hmm.
And then at 2 and 3 players, it plays a dummy hand, which is basically, you know, something I don't like a lot, but you know, you can make it work. But this scales all the way up to 7 players.
Okay, cool.
And it works the exact same. You just have maybe a smaller hand of cards and things like that. The only disadvantage that comes with a smaller hand is that sometimes you might not get all of the different types of regions. So like if you get no mountain cards, you're never going to get any mountain points. And that can be a little bit disappointing. But the game goes by so fast. And you know, you'd have the opportunity to just kind of make sure you get all the points in the regions that you do have cards for. So,
gotcha.
So it works really well.
If you were going to assign an age range for a game like this and a time, what do you think?
I think if you're like 7 or 8, this works. Where I've actually played this every single week the past, I think 4 or 5 weeks at my school. We have a 20-minute block on Mondays that's called Drop Everything and Socialize. And right now, I have a group of girls that run into my room and are like, oh, are we going to play? And
nice.
Even today, like I was telling them I'm grading some papers, and they were like, they just sat around and waited on me until I finished, and we played a quick round of Birds of a Feather. So that's middle and high schoolers, you know, playing it, and they really like it. They like the quickness of it. They also, you know, it's odd. It's not like a gotcha game because you're not, you know, messing anybody up, but you'll see like people high five if like, you played a purple card and I played a purple card. Yes. And like high fiving and
nice.
stuff like that. So, that it really seems to work for that kind of middle school group. I'm sure it works for middle-aged people too. But we, you know, I owned this game for over a year, maybe even 2, before I actually got the chance to play it. And I almost had sold it and gotten rid of it.
Really?
But I broke it out at my wife's house because my brother-in-law had his girlfriend over, so we hit seven people for the first time, and I didn't have a whole lot of games for seven.
Yeah.
And we played this, and like, you know, I thought it was going to be kind of cheesy, and like immediately when we were done, they were like, we're playing right now.
That's cool.
Because they were like, I know I'm going to do better. I know I'm going to win. So, it's been really popular and we've had a great time with it every place I've played it.
Excellent. That sounds really cool, man. I'm excited about getting to play Birds of a Feather with you next time we get together. Thanks for bringing that review, and, where can people find this game?
I think there's a lot of different places you can find it. Just looking on Amazon right now, it's, you know, $16. So
that's
not too
bad.
Shabby.
Yeah.
And it's not super popular, so you may not find it, at like your local game store, but if you ask them about it, I bet they can get you a copy.
Definitely. That's something that's always helpful. Going to our local game shop and just asking them, hey, can you get a hold of this game? And a lot of times they're really willing to work with you. So thanks so much, Rick. And thank you for another excellent podcast, sir. We are on to episode 4. And until next time.
Adios.
All right, I'm looking at a Jake the Snake Roberts action figure. Just want to let you know.
As you should.
My muse. His mullet is so hot. Anyway, all right. 3, 2, 1.